Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got filmmaker Matthew Grassner with me. Hey, Matthew.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
I am good. So Matthew and I just recorded his podcast all about himself, his career, and his film Mutiny, which won the Filmmakers Award at Filmvasion Los Angeles 2022 for Outstanding Short Film Comedy. So a golf clap for Matthew's film Mutiny, a wonderful comedy. And so I admit, I love all the films at the festival, but when I saw Mutiny get that award, I was like, yeah, I'm glad Mutiny's getting an award, because if you didn't, then you would have had to get one of my programmer's awards, because to keep me from cheating on the awards at the festivals, I have the programmer's award, so I never have to cheat for another topic or another category, because I can always just give my own award if the juries don't have the wonderful taste that I have. So anyway, that is my introduction.
Well, I appreciated being in the festival, and I appreciated the awards. It was terrific. It was exciting. There's nothing wrong with getting awards. It's all good.
Nothing wrong. You did not make the film and then sit down and go, my goal is to collect some awards at the film festivals, but it doesn't hurt when it happens.
No. It does not hurt. But no, I made it because I want to tell a story, and I was hoping to entertain people. And the awards are the benefit. That's the icing on the cake, so to speak.
Absolutely. I won't say, I will cut myself off from responding to the icing on the cake comment and just say, this is a four questions episode, the Discover Indie Film four questions, which are favorite films of all time. And there's an in parentheses limit three, although before we started recording, Matthew and I were joking about the impossibility limiting one's favorites. And then the last three questions are an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser known film that people should seek out. And so now I'm going to traditionally shut the fuck up and let you talk. Go ahead. Tell me how you feel about the question, favorite films, limit three, and
So here's the thing. The film business and film entertainment in general is the hardest possible thing you could be involved in because of its subjectivity. And it's the reason why one film could do really well and another film that you think is very similar could do terribly. You never know how people are going to react. That said, it's hard for me to pick three of anything because I'm going to rifle off like different genres in my favorites and the genres because I like everything. I love watching movies and I love the process. I love watching a scene that's well acted. I love watching a great sequence. Can I just rifle this nonsense off and I give you like some subject?
Absolutely. You can do anything.
Like, different genres. And I'll give you my first.
Okay, I'm going to use my old shitty joke that I told you before we started recording, which is I don't have on a black and white striped shirt with a whistle. I'm not going to throw a flag on this play. You can do this. Is podcasts are freedom. You can do anything.
Okay. 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 Here it is. I'm going to do it real quick. Cause I don't want to eat up a lot of time. So in the action genre, cause I like so many films going through very quickly, Raiders of the Lost Ark top. No question. Top is, I think, it's one of the best action films made. But I love it. Now, this is action, maybe slash action drama, I guess you could say. So I like Raiders of the Lost Ark. I like The Sting, The Three Musketeers by Richard Lester, Mask of Zorro, The Great Escape, and Robin and Marion, also by Richard Lester. I can watch any one of those films at any time. I can just watch it. So that's the action drama or action genre. Comedy. I said in the podcast, my first film was Blazing Saddles that I was taken to, but there's four that always stand out for comedy for me because they're all different. Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Blazing Saddles, Birdcage and The Hangover. All four different styles of humor, but all really well written, really funny to me.
I'm going to jump in.
This is terrible.
wait, I'm going to jump in and say, I appreciate you throwing Hangover in with those classics, because I think Hangover is incredibly funny.
Hangover is one of the most, it's really funny. I can't speak to the sequels, but the Hangover, to tell that story and never reveal anything until you, I'm probably going to ruin it for people who haven't seen the film, but by now I hope they have, to have this photo montage where, it's a well-crafted film, and it's funny, and it's genuinely, it wasn't as good as I thought. It's better than I thought it was going to be. Like, I was like, it'll be funny. And I was like, this is really funny because it was so absurd, which I'll touch on later.
And I almost feel like we could, you and I could waste an hour talking about Monty Python films, because I'm, I will just share that I love them all, of course, but I think Life of Brian is my number one for their canon.
It's a close second for me. I think Holy Grail was the first one I had seen, and so that always had like an impact, because it was the first time I'd ever seen a film sort of in that vein where you're taking, again, it's this, you're breaking the fourth wall at times, but you're telling a contemporary story in a period piece, and I really, really liked that whole approach.
I remember when it came out and there were commercials, and I remember on the news, a reviewer on like the nighttime news in LA was reviewing Holy Grail, and they show, Life of Brian, and they showed the scene where they were stoning the old man for saying Jehovah, and the review was, this film's inappropriate, no one should see it. All right, so now I'll let you, and of course
which
it
is,
made me.
Which is exactly what I'm sure the pythons were probably going for that too. Like, yeah, we want some dumb reviewers to not get the irony. But
All right, so you have another
genre. I'm
gonna
bust through these favorites.
Bust it.
I've got like five genres. I can't say there's not one film. I love all. So westerns. Because westerns are always get shortchanged in Hollywood. Oh, nobody likes westerns. Everybody likes westerns. Just tell a good story. Real quick. Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. Once Upon a Time in the West. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Little Big Man and Unforgiven. Again, five films. Completely different. But all really, really visually compelling and well told. Moving on. I like the James Bond franchise series. Casino Royale, I have to say, unfortunately, is my favorite. Even though I'm a huge Sean Connery guy, Casino Royale, I think, is an extraordinarily well-made film. It's a great movie, very entertaining.
And you probably saw Sean Connery in the theaters because your parents took you to inappropriate films. My first R-rated film, I believe, was The Spy Who Loved Me with Roger Moore in the theaters.
But, is that R-rated? Is that really R-rated? Or was that PG?
I think for the sex,
maybe it was R-rated. I don't know.
I think for the sexiness, it was a big deal that my parents were taking us. But you probably got to see Sean Connery in the theater.
Spy Who Loved Me was nah, well, only if it was a revival. Because Spy Who Loved Me was Roger Moore. So it was the last film he made as Bond within the Bond franchise of the Broccolis was Diamonds Are Forever. And then they rebooted, they got the rights from, was it Saul Zantz was the producer who worked with the Broccolis, still had the rights, and he made Never Say Never Again. And then that was when and Connery made that, but it wasn't with the Broccolis, so they couldn't do the theme music. So they basically remade Thunderball. They had the story for Thunderball. I guess that was the one that got peeled out. I'm probably misrepresenting this, but so basically Never Say Never Again is a remake of Thunderball.
Yeah.
But at any rate, with Sean Connery, and I guess they have a lot of money and stuff. But yeah, so Casino Royale, and I like Goldfinger and Butterball are great Connery films, but I really don't. All right, moving on. Dramas. This is, like I said, this is not what you want, but, you know, let me be the jackass who gives you just more than the three. And by the way, the underrated and all that other stuff, I only have like one or two, so that's easy. I didn't work on it, but The Aviator, Goodfellas, Casino, Amadeus, any Coen Brothers film, I like all the movies. Citizen Kane, which I'll get back to in a second. Lawrence of Arabia, 2001 A Space Odyssey, which you mentioned earlier. Shawshank Redemption, North by Northwest, and Vertigo are great films. But the reason I bring up Citizen Kane is not because, it's oldie time. It's a great. If you haven't seen Citizen Kane in a long time, I had a chance to see it in the Academy Theater, a museum theater. They showed it as part of the Visual Effects branch, presented it. And Citizen Kane is a very modern film. If you look at the camera work and the composition and the storytelling and the use of narrative back and forth, it's unbelievable how modern that film is for when it was made. And it's a very well-told story. So, okay, and then Golden Age of Hollywood, Adventures of Robin Hood, the Seahawk, those two great Michael Curtiz films are really good. Sci-fi, all the usual, Star Wars. Back to the Future, I think is like one of the best science fiction films that's very well told. Horror, Exorcist, Alien, Aliens, Jaws, Psycho, those are all great. Okay, so I got all through the favorites. Now I'll just go through the onesie twosies, which are much easier.
All right, you got through the favorites.
Sorry to rifle
it's a nice
off.
Big list.
I mean, there's lots, but I know, but it's filled. I look at it as there's no, it's hard to say, would you rather watch Goodfellas or Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's like they're two different movies. You can't watch. They're just different. I mean, it's not like I don't have a favorite film. I guess that's my problem.
Is there a film? I'll just ask. Is there a film that you've watched, maybe as a younger person, or maybe once VHS or DVD was out? Can you name the one you've watched the most times?
Oh, I'd probably say Blazing Saddles, or maybe Raiders of the Lost Ark, but probably Blazing Saddles, or Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars is obviously in there, but I would say the film that I if you could say most quoted, maybe Blazing Saddles, maybe Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's hard because I like movies. I mean, I don't,
yeah. And you know what the cool thing is?
It's hard.
Your list made it clear to me that Mel Brooks is kind of the perfect filmmaker because every genre you love, he has done the Mel Brooks version of. Mel Brooks parody. I call it homage because he loves the classic horror.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can tell he loved classic horror when he did Young Frankenstein. You can tell he loved Westerns when he
Young
did
Frankenstein. Oh, of course, yeah.
You can tell he loved Hitchcock when he did High Anxiety.
Absolutely.
You know?
But I don't love all his films. That's the thing. I don't like, it's not like it's, oh, I like every film this director's done. That's the same thing with, there are repeats of directors on this, but I don't necessarily, you know, like say, well, I really like that film. And a director sometimes also, if they're saddled with a script they didn't write, that's hard, you know.
I'll tease you and point out that you're in one of Mel Brooks's weaker films.
I am. Robin Hood Men of Tights.
Robin Hood Men of Tights is when he was sort of running out of gas. Maybe he should have skipped that one for me, but hey.
It's tough. I gotta be honest. I'm not gonna badmouth that film. I was in it. I got it, and in it is like, you know, specialty extra or whatever I was when I was young. But what's funny is I remember when it was being shot and I remember seeing scenes, and it wasn't until after the fact, I'm like, oh, that's a parody of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Like, there was, because the distance between when Robin Hood, because it really, I mean, obviously there's the throwbacks to the Adventures of Robin Hood with Errol Flynn, because Cary Elwes does sort of a pseudo Errol Flynn impression, which is actually pretty damn funny. And he's great. Everybody in the movie's great. But there's parody, that's specific parody to Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, the Kevin Costner film. But it was, the distance was quite a few years between the two. So if you weren't like a colossal fan of Prince of Thieves, you'd be like, I don't really understand why this is like, oh, that's a pay, because it's like specific to those scenes. So, I was there when they shot them. I was in the scenes. I was in front of camera, and I'm like, oh, later I'm like, oh, that's a parody of that. Oh, okay. But like I said, it was an amazing opportunity.
It's still a good film. I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm just saying it's one of Mel's weaker efforts. Yeah, well, I think, but you know, they don't all turn out great.
It's
all right.
It's
so
a hard job. Okay, now it comes down to the worst of the worst, where I have to.
Underrated is hard for you?
Yeah. So underrated, you know, one of the most, it's one of my favorite films, and it's underrated. It didn't get like, I don't know how it did box office. And I can go through a list of other, but I'm not going to. One of the films I think I really like, it's underrated, is Jon Favreau's film Chef. He wrote it, directed it, and starred in it. And I really like that film because of the, maybe it's because for me and personally, it was watching somebody have passion for a thing, get distracted by something that was maybe more comfortable or maybe more consistent, and then had to go back and find out what they really wanted to do. And I identify with that because that was kind of how my career has gone, where I sort of came out to Hollywood to do a thing. I started doing something else, which was in the same vein, but then it became not repetitive or pedantic, but it became a job. And then I was like, no, I really want to do this other thing. And that movie, I really like that film. I think it's really well made. It's a great father-son story. And, you know, I don't know, it may have done well at the box office. It was funny because in interviews, you know, it was rated R. And that's a film, funny enough, that was rated R. They're like, that could have easily been PG-13. But they wanted to show the strife and the battle of being a chef and what it's like to be in the kitchen. There's a lot of, like, you know, they're dropping F-bombs every other. I'm like, I know you wanted it accurate, but, you know, more people would have seen it if it was PG-13. But it's not me. It's his film. And I respect whatever anybody wants to do. And it's not just about a commercial endeavor. But I think that that's like, that's a great family film. I mean, aside from some of the language, it's great. It's a great story of how somebody did a thing and comes back to, I know it seems like an odd film to say it's underrated. It's just a lot of people, I don't think, have seen it. So
yeah, no, I think it slipped under, because for a lot of reasons, it slipped under the radar, but yeah, I think it's a special film. And this is in a greater context. I'm a fan of the film because, you know, Favreau, he's pretty much our age. And of course, Swingers was a special film, and he followed it up with some smaller things. And then he became a Marvel guy. And the fact that even after making a couple Iron Man films and being, and then Jumanji, and being like, being at like an insane level of massive Hollywood blockbuster director, he chose at one point just to like make this small film Chef, where he's playing the lead. And you know, I just find it so admirable in a way that he chose to dial back and make a small film for himself amongst the massive blockbusters that he now gets paid to do.
And I agree. And that's part of why I like it. And as I said, being to write and star and to direct yourself is hard. I'd never want to do that. I never want to be in the movie and direct it. That's a pain in the ass. That's a whole other job, but I really identified with the story, and I've always liked it. You know, I mean, I could have come up with some like really amazingly interesting, you know, European indie or what. But to be honest, I like the movie. I always thought it was. If it's on TV, I'll get it. Not on TV. It's nothing's on television. Watch it on streaming or whatever. But I'll always, if I feel like watching something, I'll watch something like that. I'm like, oh, that's a good. It's like a fun movie. I like that movie. I like the story.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah. Well, now overrated.
I hate. You know what? Okay. So let me just start with, and this will probably get edited out, and then this will destroy my career right now. It's really hard to make a film. And so it's really hard when you get success on a film. God bless anybody who gets that success, because it's just hard. It's hard to get it financed. It's hard to write it. It's hard to finance it. It's hard to get people you want in it. I go down the list. So anybody who gets anything made, no matter how good or bad it is, it's such an impossible endeavor. So when it has success on top of it, it has a tremendous amount of success. Who the hell am I to say, that was overrated? It's like, I wish anybody, even if it's a movie that I'm like, the only times I ever had real disdain for film is if it was something that we had bid on and didn't get doing visual effects. I'd be like, oh, I hope that tanks, you know, because we didn't get hired. I mean, but that's just petty, that's childish. But aside from that, I mean, you're always wishing every filmmaker success. However, there's a film that I should have loved and I should have thought was hilarious. And I'm probably one of 12 people on planet Earth who didn't necessarily like it. And that would be Something About Mary. I just didn't like that movie. And I know they're like, how could you do comedy? Or you think you do comedy? Or you think you're funny? And how could you think that this is, you know, I just, something about it, I just didn't like. And I mean, I think all the actors in it are great. And it's not even, and funny enough, I liked like Dumb and Dumber. I thought it was hilarious.
Right.
And
so you dig the Farrellys.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No, it's not like I didn't, it's not like I'm like, oh, the Farrellys, oh, please. No, there's scenes in Dumb and Dumber. I was in tears. I was crying. I was laughing so hard. And they were completely inappropriate scenes. You know, scotch taping the head of a parakeet back on to, that was owned by a blind girl is one of the most inappropriate, horrible things. But at the time, I thought it was absolutely hilarious. It was funny. Not really when I explain it that way. It's not very funny. It's actually quite terrible. But regardless, I it's not like I have a blanket. I hate the Farrellys. I just, for whatever reason, that film, I just couldn't. Maybe it was in a bad mood when I saw it. And I saw it in a theater back when, you know, everybody went to theaters, see films in theaters when it came out. And I mean, there was not a seat available. It was, everybody was laughing so hard that you could not hear, which is anybody would ask for. I mean, my understanding was when Blazes Howls first came out, there's a lot of stuff in Blazes Howls can be considered inappropriate and it's awkward and everything, but it's a great social commentary, which sadly still maintains today. But my understanding is when Mel Brooks first had released that, the first time I saw it was in a drive-in, so it was like contained in a car, but is that people couldn't hear the jokes because they were laughing so hard. And Something About Mary, I witnessed that firsthand. I'm like, wow, these guys have it nailed. But it was just, I feel it was overrated. But I understand, but intellectually, I completely 100% understand why it was successful. I do get it. I personally used to like the film.
Yeah.
It was shock value for shock value's sake. And if you look at it, like a Dumb and Dumber, you're like, well, this is the natural evolution of what the next thing you're going to do. It's like, well, shit, this worked. So we're going to make it even more like outrageous. And so it's not, so I respect him a huge amount as filmmakers. And I think that, you know, again, good for you. If you get anything made and it's that successful, I wish I had a hundredth of that success. Personally, I just didn't like it. I've only seen it once. Maybe if I go back and see it now, because I've only seen it once in the theater, maybe I go back and see it and I change my mind 100%. And then
it's possible.
Edit this out.
But you also hit a note there that I often, if someone has a hard time with the category, I always say, look, you're not saying it's a bad film, just saying it's overrated. Like you mentioned, you love the Coens. I love the Coens. Yeah, I won't. Right. Sometimes I name the films, but like, you know, there's films that people say are the best the Coens have done. And there's films that people pay less attention to in the Coen library. And I often say, like, you know, I'll say No Country for Old Men is overrated because I could name three or four Coen brothers films that I think are superior. And yet that's the one they got the Oscar for. Well, so, yeah. So I'm not saying No Country for Old Men is a bad film. Fun. I'm just saying, why the F does that film get the Coen brothers an Oscar and Miller's Crossing didn't come close? Like, so anyway, that's my overrated speech.
No.
And that's what you kind of did with Mary, true, right? Because you're actually, saying Mary didn't work for me, but I think the Farrellys are hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And it's funny, the Coens, because like the Coens, like a lot of people really thought like the Hudsucker Proxies are the weakest film. I love that movie. I think it was fantastic. Every aspect of that movie, I think, is very well made and well told, and the story is entertaining. But yeah, no, I get it. But I feel bad saying, because I don't disrespect the filmmakers or the actors or anything. I just personally just didn't. But I will say that before the year is out, I will investigate watching it again, because I only saw it the one time. And I, for all I know, I could have just, you know, I was doing visual effects. We had our company. I could have had a really crappy day and saw this at night on a Friday and said, I don't need this. I don't know. You'd think that, and that might have been what it was. But yeah, I always think back to that film. So I've talked to me like, oh my God, how could you not like it? I'm like, well, I'm telling you, I didn't like it. It just,
and mood can matter. The wrong Lord way. Knows, no, mood, no mood can matter. All right, well, the last question.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You
ready for the last one? Lesser known that people should seek out?
Absolutely. The most recent, there's a bunch of films, but I don't want to do that whole nonsense I did for my most favorite, because I saw a film a few years ago. It was through Academy screenings. It was directed by Chris Weitz. It's called Operation Finale. And I thought that that would have done like really well. And it would have been on the award circuit and stuff. And it was a movie. You know what the film is? Do you remember it?
I don't know that. And I think Chris Weitz is very good.
So this was, it starred Oscar Isaac as a Mossad agent. And they go after Adolf Eichmann. And Sir Ben Kingsley plays Adolf Eichmann. And he's hiding in Buenos Aires, and they discover, and he's like living this other life as this with this, like, you know, Argentinian last name. And he's like this guy. And it's just a really well told story. And I remember seeing it go, and I saw it a couple times, because I saw it a couple different screenings. And I remember the Academy, so we get to go to the screenings and stuff. And I thought, oh, this is going to do really well. This is great. It's compelling. It's interesting. It's a true story. They don't bend the story. It's pretty close to the real history. Nothing. And I was like, but this is really, and Oscar Isaac is absolutely fantastic. He's the lead. Nick Kroll is in it and playing not a comedy bit. And he's playing these straight, one of the other Mossad guys. And it's really, really well made. It's really great. It was really entertaining. Some unbelievable scenes between Ben Kingsley and Oscar Isaac as he's trying to interrogate him. It's really great, and I don't know why it didn't get more. Maybe the press and marketing wasn't that good. That can kill a film, certainly. But yeah, Operation Finale. It was good. It was a really enjoyable film, and I was racking my brain as to a film that people may not remember or know, or that didn't get heard. And I'm trying to think of it, and because a lot of the films, sadly, I've like populist movies on my list of favorites. But I'd seen that not too long, a couple of years ago. So
that would be a thing you and I didn't.
It's worth watching.
A thing I didn't bring up, but I guess I'm going to give in and bring it up, is that, you know, when you talk about a film that you saw and you, I think you've mentioned more than one that you saw and were impressed with, and then it just didn't click with audiences. Sometimes it's the goddamn marketing department, right? Sometimes
100%.
Sometimes there's,
you know what?
They just don't know how to, they don't know how to present that film to the public, and they present it in the wrong way, and it just doesn't go anywhere.
A film, the one that always pops in mind, there's one film that pops in mind, but it wasn't Lesser Known because it actually got nominated for Best Picture or anything. But the marketing on it, I didn't feel. Now, mind you, this is also back in the day when you're watching movie trailers, maybe TV commercials. L.A. Confidential, right? You know, it's Russell Crowe's kind of breakout role. What's his name? Australian. Guy Pearce. 19, you know, late 40s, early 50s, Los Angeles, corrupt police department. The trailers made it seem not campy. It wasn't campy, but it almost seemed like it was just, now maybe I'll look back at the trailers and go, oh, this is just the movie. But I remember seeing the trailers going, I don't know about this. And then I saw it, I'm like, this is a really, really good movie. And that's where I thought marketing kind of, now look, there's probably some marketers who did it, say, yeah, fuck you, Gratzner. I worked on that all night. Yeah, I don't know. But I don't know. I just remember seeing the commercials and trailers that I didn't feel they represented the film accurately enough. I have friends who produce films who the distribution was god awful. I mean, just horrible. And they were really, really good movies. I will bring one up. A friend of mine produced the film Marshall. It was, Chadwick Boseman played Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American Supreme Court justice. An excellent film. Josh Gad is in it. Excellent film. Got the marketing on it. The distribution, not great. Great film. Really enjoyable. Great performances. Really compelling. And didn't get out there. Nobody saw it. Not because it wasn't good, but because nobody knew it was out there. So I would almost say there's the biggest crime in the film business is not being able to get your thing to be seen. And if you make a film and you even, maybe it's a film that's not as good as you would hope, but it still you know there's an audience for it. Or it's a really great film and you know there's an audience. And to not have that film out there for people to see or not distributed in a manner that gives people the opportunity to see it is very disheartening, to say the least.
It's very tough. Making a great film is not a guarantee of success. It just isn't. And Lord knows we're learning now.
In fact, it's understaffed.
I see all the time headlines that basically say this lousy movie from 10 years ago is number one on Netflix right now because it's just people are getting, you know, and it's just a bummer because there's so much great filmmaking that that goes unnoticed.
There's some, I couldn't agree more. And there's something that's happened now, and I don't want to go off on a huge tangent. I think I'd wrap this up. But the biggest challenge we have now, because listen, the business has changed dramatically. Theatrical releases aren't what they once were. Streaming is now taking all the risks. You're making these movies that would never be made theatrically because they wouldn't put the money into it, but they'll put it in streaming. What's what you're missing? And I say this from firsthand experience, working in the film business doing visual effects for years, is you miss the eventized experience, that eventizing of a movie. It's a big event. It's going to come out. It's going to be, and you would wait and you'd be excited and you go to the theater. It was a big opportunity. Now, by the way, I'm not talking pandemic. Pandemic's a challenge. That's a health risk. You can't throw a bunch of people in theater, and you won't get anybody sick and stuff. But that business where, like, they'll make a giant movie on Netflix. They'll spend, like, $200 million. And it's, like, right next to, you know, I don't know, Turner and Hooch, or not even that. It'll be, like, next to, like, the Stallone film Over the Top. Or, like, it's like wait a minute. This movie is this big and there's no, like, triumphant. We can't. It's just on there as a card. Like, you go to the main page and it's next to. It's so disheartening. It's so hard.
And you pointed out that it's not an event anymore because when it comes out, we don't have to make sure to watch it opening weekend to avoid spoilers. And you know what I mean? Like, exactly. Like there used to be a thing of like opening weekend meant so much more because also you shared it with everyone. Absolutely. Right. And now one of the worst things for me is I think HBO Max does something smart where like if it's a theatrical release, they do the theater. Then it's on for streaming for a month and they pull it. So instead of watching it when it first hits streaming, I watch it right. If I'm aware, I'll try to watch. Oh shit. If I don't watch it now, I got to wait 6 months, but there's not, but there's no drive to catch it early. There just isn't.
Correct. Well, and I will say now, counter everything I just said with, it's a business. The business has changed. People have changed. The technology has changed. Their time has changed. When I grew up, if you wanted to see something that was really good entertainment, you went to the movies. Television and film were like, the film business looked down on TV to a degree, and TV, you know, like you wouldn't see a TV star become a movie star. That never happened. It never happened in a million years back then. And it was like there was a divide between the two. But the reality is, movies are very expensive to go see. People don't have the time. And everybody has a personal movie theater in their pocket or on their laptop or on their iPad. So that's the thing that, so as much as I am a huge cinephile and I think that the best possible way to see any kind of entertainment is definitely in the theater, I get it. People don't have the time. They don't want to spend the money. And the competition is insane. You know, also growing up, if you wanted to be taken seriously as an actor or to get that attention, you would go to Hollywood. You would audition. You would be an actor. Now, I'm going to do something crazy on my like mini trampoline. I'm going to juggle water balloons, and it's going to be on TikTok, and 15 million people are going to see it tomorrow. We're in a different world. So I have a lot of friends, and we talk about, oh, back in the day. I was like, yeah, but back in the day, you can't compare that. That's like saying before, you know, the airplane, well, I'm going to go from California to Indiana, but I'll be taking the train, and it's going to take me, 15 weeks to get there or whatever, as opposed to I'm going to get on an airplane. It's two different technologies. It's two different time periods. The entertainment has evolved into something different. That's it. Do I feel people have better experience in the theater? Oh, I still do. Absolutely. As you said, it's a social experience. You have to be there. However, when it push comes to shove, it also comes down to time and timetable. But it's, I think, selfishly, based on working in the business as long as I had earlier in my career, there is a frustration of you. It takes so much effort to make a film. It's so hard, and you're always rolling the dice and hoping that every single cylinder fires and it all looks like it's going to work. And you want people to love it. You want it to inevitably to make money, so you get to make more of them. But then, like, it just sort of, there's this like wind that's taken out of your sails. Oh, by the way, I saw you made that movie. It's on Netflix. Really? Oh, yeah. It's right next to some like really bad movie from the 80s. Like you just lose all the magic and all the anticipations. But that's the business. That's the market. That's what it is. And I'm not even talking about the financial deals one used to get, particularly even in network television. People used to make a lot of money doing that. And now it's like you're bought out. You don't make the back end. And I don't want to go on about that nonsense, but it's not nonsense. I mean, it's a real thing. But just in terms of an audience experience, I feel that it's just changed. And I guess some for the better, because now you have studio. There are streamers that are making movies that the studios would never touch. So that's great. And there are people who are filmmakers who have a voice, and they get to do things, and they get to say things that they would never put in the theater. So, oh, we don't want it to get a rated R. We don't want it to do this. Oh, we don't. Well, you know, we're a major studio that also has theme parks, so we can't have a film that says these things or represents these sort of, you know. Anyway, but yeah.
All true. I'll add that it's, as we know, it's always in flux. And I feel like just in the last 6 months, really, I think things are starting to change for streaming, because streaming was throwing money at cool shit that,
oh, sure,
that
sure,
would not get made. And now, you know, they finally learned that their stock prices can go down.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's starting to look like they're going to get more conservative, and they're going to start thinking like studios did and only do the stuff they know they can get more eyeballs on. So I'm a little worried about what's going to happen. You know, because Netflix, I mean, they all have been really doing really interesting cutting edge shit. And
sure,
I'm a little worried that it's going to shift to all the same kind of commercial. Well, it's very successful, but it's not for me. Like
it will. No. Listen, Netflix is talking about offering a commercial service where like you actually see advertisement. It's lesser cost per month. It's like, well, okay, now you have that. Well, Johnson & Johnson doesn't want to have a story about, a kid who's trans. We can't do that because we're Johnson. I mean, that's, you're now back to network television. So look, money is the core of all of it. And it is a business, you know, it is, I always joke, it's not the film collective or the film co-op. It's the film business. It's not a charity. And somebody's got to make money. And somebody putting money into it wants to see money come back to them. You know, otherwise they're not going to do it. So I think that it's always in flux. And then, you know, the cliche that everybody says now, oh, but Top Gun has brought the film industry back to the theater. It's true. That's a movie you want to see in the theater. And, you know, you have these event films. That is probably one of the best examples of something where people did go and see it and they were excited to see it. And that was a film you had to see that way. However, how many of those films, the studios are even, it's always that never-ending problem of the studios are now going to be like, oh, you know what? We need to make more Top Gun movies. No, you just need to make entertaining big movies. You can make more of those, sure, but make something that's entertaining that people get in the theater. But I think that, you know, the last I'll say, streaming is great. I think there's amazing content to be seen and films and entertainment to be seen. But at the end of the day, you know, when streaming came about, everybody's like, oh, it's going to be so much better than cable satellite because you're not gonna have to pay as much. Like, no, you're gonna pay more because now I have to have all these channels. It never changes. You're always gonna have somebody come in and work a business model to essentially make that kind of dough. So I get it. It's a business, and you know, and it's evolving. And truth be told, we have way more issues than
thanks to technology, the evolution of this business is faster than ever because if you look at the way Hollywood films evolved, you know, through the golden era where they owned their own theaters to being busted up to the 70s when the artists took over for a while to the 80s when it became all blockbusters thanks to Jaws and Star Wars. But now, transition from theater to DVD, theater to home video is now all blown up, and who knows where it's going to be in a couple of years. I think there's a lot of people who make a lot of money who have no idea what's going to happen just in a few years. I mean,
100%. Oh, I mean, let me tell you something. The pandemic threw gasoline on the fire of streaming because all of a sudden, you know, the idea of theaters were going away or the theater experience. I mean, that's also a self-fulfilling prophecy because the theaters, the challenge with anything that's within the business world or corporate America, it could be movie theaters, it could be going to a baseball game, it could be, as soon as it becomes a business, everybody jacks up all the prices. So the tickets to go to the movie theater is too much. It's just too expensive. It's not for the family like it used to be. So, and every time somebody has a thing that they can add more money to, oh, now the concessions are this, I get all that. But having streaming, we're like, we're going to come up with something that globally affects everybody not being able to leave their house. That's it. I mean, that pushed it. But just as you said, you know, stock prices are coming down a little bit on things, and people are starting to realize there is a ceiling to some of this. But I think it's just always going to change. It truly has been, as goofy and cliche as it may sound, it's a digital revolution. I don't think people realize. I mean, I grew up at a time where you had, you know, half-inch video cassette you'd rent, or you know, cassette tapes you listen to, and the digital technology and the revolution of that technology has changed this planet so greatly within information transfer to education to entertainment. I think sometimes you have to stop and think about it. I always joke with my friends that when we grew up, it's like, remember when, like, if somebody called your house and you weren't home, they couldn't get a hold of you? That was it. Like, whereas now you've got a cell phone. I'm going to text you. I'm going to this, I'm going to that. And the same with even when we were doing visual effects back in the 90s, you know, I would go to Barnes & Noble or a bookstore or a library, and we would get books and color copy reference because that was how we would, like, oh, we need what looks like Venice, Italy. Well, I'm going to go buy a bunch of books or check out a bunch of books in the library, and then we're going to color copy them and then make packets and give them to our crew. I mean, you didn't get in the early days. You didn't get online. And I remember it was the first show a friend of mine was supervising miniatures for. I think it was not Red Planet. Maybe it was Red Planet. Red Planet or Mission to Mars. I know it was Red Planet, I think. And the visual effects supervisor, he was taking digital photos of the miniatures and then emailing them to the visual effects supervisor, who I'm pretty sure was Mark Stetson. And this guy, Scott Schneider, who ran the show, he's working for DD at the time. And I remember thinking, wow, that's revolutionary. I remember first part of my thought was, that's amazing. You can take a picture of the thing you're doing, email it to them, full-blown color. They can see it, approve it, move forward. And then I realized that's terrible. Only because now everybody's going to expect that to be now. Oh, we got to do it quicker, faster, quick. And so on the one hand, I was blown away at the expediency. And on the other, it's like, oh, well, now our job's really hard. Because now it's like, forget, there's no time to think and no time. We need it yesterday. And so that's where the digital work and entertainment has been a bit challenging. But that's the evolution. You got to move with it or you live in the past.
Got to move with it, and it is going to go somewhere. We just don't know. We don't know where it's going to land, but we will probably sound very old.
Yeah,
five,
by
10
tomorrow.
Years from now.
No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. That's true. All right. Well, here, let me wrap it up.
Yes, please. I've talked enough.
I will tell people to go to MatthewGratzner.com. Matthew, you should be able to spell if you can't. Shame on you. Gratzner, GRATZNER.com. Or at Matthew Gratzner on social media. So that's how you learn more about Matthew and his work. From effects to directing, writing, everything. I think it's fair to call you a Renaissance person.
Sure, why not?
One time more tight. You got your fingers in many pies. And now I will ask people, thank you for listening to the Discover Indie Film Podcast. You should like and subscribe. I think I forgot this on the last podcast. Like and subscribe. Give it 5 stars. Be nice, because Lord knows, I haven't looked at my reviews, but, 5,000 people enjoy something and just say that was nice and move on. And one person doesn't like it and gives like a 1-star review. So, we got to take time for the things we like as well as the things that piss us off. That's my internet, be kind on the internet pitch. So if you want to learn more about this podcast, go to discoverindiefilm.com, and on social media, it's at DIFWINS. I'll add that this podcast, where I talk to filmmakers who I've met from programming to film festivals, that I learned that everyone I talked to who had a feature was going to streaming. We just talked about streaming for a while. And all the people with shorts would, end up on YouTube or Vimeo and get lost in the ocean there. So I talked to a bunch of people, and we threw shorts together and created a TV series called Discover Indie Film. And that's on Amazon Prime Video. So just go to Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, and enjoy the first 6 seasons of the Discover Indie Film TV series. I can tell you there are short films that are handpicked from the festival circuit. Every possible genre, and all wonderfully made, and passion projects like Matthew's film Mutiny, where the person made the film because they had to. It was in them, and they wanted to make a film. They wanted to make that film. And that's really not what you get when you see things that went through a committee of executives to decide, okay, this will be the most profitable choice we can make. So anyway, that's my pitch for you to watch Amazon Prime Video, watch Discover Indie Film on Amazon Prime Video, and give that 5 stars if you get a chance. And I think I mentioned at the top that Matthew's film Mutiny won that award at Filmvasion Los Angeles that we held in June. It happens every June, so it'll be back next year. If you want to learn more about that festival, it's filminvasionla.com, and it's at filminvasionla on social media. And its sister festival is the Sherman Oaks Film Festival that's every November. And you can learn more about that at shermanoaksff.com, and it's at shermanoaksff on social media. For shits and giggles, I mentioned that I got an email this morning. Today is August 1st that Matthew and I are on Zoom. And so the first of the month, I got that Film Freeway email. For each festival, Filmvasion LA and Sherman Oaks Film Festival are both ranked in the top 100 best reviewed festivals worldwide. And that's actually out of more than 10,000 festivals. I don't understand it. So anyway, always proud to note that the filmmakers who've been at those two festivals have enjoyed it. So I will thank you, Matthew, for doing this.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it. I enjoy speaking with you. And
yeah. Well, we have a lot in common.
I mean, like
we have a lot in common. But I have
it's,
thanked
it's,
you,
it's
and
good.
Now I will thank
it's good.
Everyone.
It's good. And
we have a little Zoom delay. It's fucked with us.
Yes, that would be an editing nightmare. So hopefully...
Now I'm just going to let it ride. I'm going to let it ride. I think people understand. All right. Well, I will thank everyone for listening. Thank you, Matthew, for being here. Goodbye, everybody.